வினத்து சக வீரியம் கரவாவகை தேஜஸ்வினாவதீ தமஸ்து மாவித்விஷாவகை. ஓம் சாந்தி சாந்தி சாந்தி. We chant the first five shlokas of Bhajagovinda. Bhajagovindam, Bhajagovindam, Govindam, Bhajamudamate, Samprapte sannihite kale, Nahi nahi rakshati bukrin parane. Mudachahikita nagama krishnam, Purusat buddhim, Manasi vitrishnam, எல்லவசே நிஜ கர்மோபாகம் வித்தம் தேன வினோதய சித்தம் நாரீஸ்தனபர நாபீதேசம் திருஷ்ட்வா மாதா மோகாவேஷம் ஏதன்மாம்ச விசாதி விகாரம் மனசி விசிந்தய வாரம் வாரம் நளினீதலகத ஜலமதி தரளம் தத்வ ஜீவிதமதிசய சபலம் வித்தி வியாத்ய விமான க்ரஸ்தம் லோகம் சோகஹதம் ச சமஸ்தம் யாவத் வித்தோ பாஜன சக்தஹ தாவன்னிச பரி வாரோ ரக்தஹ பஷ்சா ஜீவதி ஜர்ஜர தேஹி வாதாம் கோபி ந ப்ருச்சதி யேஹே. பஜ கோவிந்தம் பஜ கோவிந்தம் கோவிந்தம் பஜ மூடமதே சம்ப்ராப்தே சந்நிஹிதே காலே நஹி நஹி ரக்ஷதி துக்ரிம் கரணே. பஜ கோவிந்தம் which is also called as மோஹ முத்கரம். This Moha Mudgara means the uplifter of delusion, one which destroys delusion. It is only the human being who is given the choice of action. No other animals have what is called as choice of action. So only human being can choose a particular goal and function. So the goal is only with reference to human life. There are no goals with reference to animal life. Animals have no purpose or goal. Only human being has purpose or goals. So the Shastras divide our goals mainly into four. They are called as Purushartha. Now, out of these four, let us first discuss the first three. The first three that the Shastras talk about are Artha, Kama and Dharma. The last one is Moksha. Artha, Kama, Dharma. Now, this Bhajagovindam text is talking about human beings stuck at this level and not going to the fourth one. See, life means one has to grow. One cannot afford to be stuck at the present condition. But human beings, majority of them, unfortunately, get stuck at this, which is Artha, Kama and Dharma. Now, what is this Artha, Kama, Dharma mean? Artha means wealth. Now, why do we need to keep wealth as our goal and why do we keep wealth as our goal in the beginning? For survival purpose. All of us have survival instinct. So, for the survival purpose, we need wealth as a goal in the beginning. Artha. Then, as long as we are even struggling for survival, in our head, in our mind, the thought of pleasure and all are not going to come. Pleasure comes only after having dealt with the survival aspect. Till then, the first initial goal is survival. Isn't it? So everybody, they have this instinct. It is basic need. So therefore, initially the goal is survival. Artha means survival. Once that is relatively taken care of, then you don't say, listen, I'm getting my food. That's enough. I don't eat thereafter only for hunger. I start eating for taste. Isn't it? First you eat the food, and once the stomach is full, then you'll get the sweets and ice creams and everything. So the sweets and ice creams are not for your survival purpose, that is for your enjoyment purpose, taste purpose. So that comes secondary. First is survival. Second is pleasure. Now when we get this survival and pleasure taken care of, then we want it to be with us always, especially in future. Now future, when we say, a human being alone is self-conscious. No other animal is self-conscious. So being self-conscious, human being alone is also concerned about the death. And as a result, they also want to secure the life after death. So then comes this question as to why some people are born in opulence, why some people are born in poverty, and why even though some people are born in opulence, there is still something stopping them from the enjoyments of life. Shweta is asking if my voice is clear to everyone. Is it clear to everyone? Yeah, so Avantika is saying it's clear. So maybe Shweta, then there is some problem at your end. Okay, so we want to secure our future. We want to make sure that we get this permanently. And we analyze and see that some are born in opulence, some are born in poverty, and some, even though we are born in opulence, there is something that is stopping us from enjoying. So then this thought process comes that there is something called as karma, which gives us certain punya and papa, which makes us enjoy, makes us take us birth in opulence rather than poverty, and also enjoy it. So therefore, the next thing that human being starts getting concerned about is earning that pap and punya. Not pap but punya. Avoiding pap and earning punya. So what you have to do? You have to follow dhanam, dharmam, etc., etc. So people do that also. So these are the three things that majority of us are concerned about. Artha, kama, dharma. Dharma here means pap and punya, which will secure our future. We want to reduce the pap and increase the punya. This is called as delusion. Because if you carefully analyze this, artha is not permanent, kama is not permanent, punya papa giving you a certain world, that is also not permanent. While all this is at the temporary level, transactional level required, we think this itself can give us what we are looking for. We are looking for eternal happiness. No one will be satisfied with temporary, passing, fleeting happiness. What we are looking for is eternal happiness. So the delusion is to believe and be convinced that the eternal happiness can come from the objects, the contact with the objects, from punya, avoiding papa. So this delusion will be removed by understanding what Vajragundam is talking about. And once this is understood, you get what is called as vairagya. The term used in the Bhagavad Gita is nirvedam. Nirvedam meaning you become absolutely detached. Vedas, four in number, Rig, Yajur, Sama, Atharvana. And each Vedas have four parts, Mantra, Brahmana, Aranyaka and Upanishads. Mantra, Brahmana and Aranyaka, they are called Veda Purva Bhag. This Veda Purva Bhag is generally referred to as Vedas. And this Veda Purva Bhag caters to these three goals, which is Artha, Kama, Dharma. So if you live your life as per the injunctions of the Vedas and follow the rituals and offer your rituals to certain devatas, your desires will be fulfilled. You will get Artha, Kama, and you will also earn a lot of punya, which will take you to Swarga. But Veda Purva Bhag doesn't touch upon Moksha, which is the fourth goal. In fact, that's the only goal. So these first three goals, you go through the Veda Purva Bhag, but do them as yoga rather than getting involved in them per se. Attain purity, and with that purity and maturity, understanding that iron and gold is good for buying iron and gold, I then move on to the next goal, which is finding my true nature, attaining liberation. That is called moksha, freedom. Freedom from samsara. So that mumukshatvam comes. You become nirveda, means you go beyond the Vedas, beyond the first three, mantra, brahmana and aranyaka, the Veda Purva Bhag, and come to Vedanta. So Bhajagovindam is a preliminary text which prepares us to give us that detachment, remove the delusion and give us the right perspective. So in this, the first mantra, first verse is a chorus where the Guru Adi Shankara is telling us to seek the reality at the body level, at the mind level, at the intellect level, and not throw our potential to attain that reality in search of this frivolous, non-essential, passing, fleeting sense objects and pleasures of the world. So he says, seek Govinda, seek Govinda, seek Govinda, O Mudamati, O fool. At the destined time, at the time of the destined time, mundane goals, activities will never satisfy or save you indeed. This you must understand. Therefore, while you have a body, he's not saying therefore don't take care of the body. While you have the body, understand that it is an instrument for you to go through the pleasures of life. At the same time, you've got to use the instrument and develop detachment. So this he talks in verse number 2 with reference to wealth. So he says, you've got to make sure that you control the craving for wealth. He doesn't say throw away your wealth. He's saying that craving should not be there. In other words, the mind should not be centered in wealth. You don't have to run away from wealth. You don't have to run after wealth. O fool, give up your thirst for aggrandizing wealth. Instead, what you should do? Create in your mind the thought of reality instead of the thirst for the wealth. So he's only asking us to remove the thirst, that exaggerated value that is placed upon the wealth. So then he says, you continue working, serving a higher purpose with the mind established in the higher, then whatever comes as a prasad, take it, he says. So whatever you gain from your action, content your mind with that wealth obtained through such activity. Then he comes to enjoyment, pleasures. And when he talks about the pleasure, the example he takes is of the opposite sex, because in the sexual activity, all the five senses are involved. The highest pleasure example is taken to represent any sense content. And then he is doing what is called as Pratipaksha Bhavana, which is an intellectual re-evaluation, reassessment of pleasure or sense contact from a totally higher angle, from a totally different angle. So he says, this pleasure, when you look at it from a different angle, you will see it and give it the right value. So So he says, seeing the bosom and navel of a woman, do not fall a prey to frenzied delusion. Question it. See, when the mind starts running, what happens? The moment, see, your mind doesn't run into the areas of unknown. Mind will go only into the areas of the known. The moment you intellectually know something, then you have, through discrimination, aware of what pleasure it can give, what pleasure it will not give. So, you then start developing desire for it. So, through the knowledge, after knowing about an object, about a place, about an object or being, then you develop desire to possess that object or being or to visit the place. And once the desire thoughts keep running, it becomes a vega. We studied about vega in verse number 22, chapter 5 of Bhagavad Gita. It becomes a velocity. Without that desire, I cannot stay there. Without achieving the object of my desire, I cannot stay peacefully. This is what he calls this. Do not fall a prey to the frenzied delusion. Mind starts reaching that state. And then he says, at that time what you do? Bring in your intellect and question this frenzied delusion towards the object. See it intellectually. Analyze it. Then you will see that it is also nothing but modification of flesh, fat and bone, etc. And this you got to reflect well in your mind over and over again. And we said over and over again because we are now craving for these things because over and over again we indulge in it. By constant unintelligent thinking about these objects, we have now got this frenzied delusion. And if you remain in your house or wherever you are without any purpose, the mind which is idle will naturally go towards the sense objects and pleasures of the world. It will not go anywhere else. See, a person who is busy working for survival, he doesn't require this knowledge. The person who's got nirvedam, who's got detachment, he is already there pursuing Brahman, Atman, etc. But the problem is, when our survival is taken care of, once our survival is taken care of, and we do not have any higher purpose, then what happens? Naturally, the mind goes towards the worldly objects and pleasures and indulges in it. And throughout our life, by over and over again indulging in them, we have now got that kind of a frenzied delusion towards them, becomes difficult to overpower them. So this is the problem. That's why we say Vedanta is not for the really, really poor category of people. Because really, really poor category of people, they are still working towards the survival. Not much of a problem for them. And one who has got detachment, doesn't matter whether he's poor or rich, for him also only Vedanta is needed. But this preparatory text thereafter is only for people whose survival is taken care of, but doesn't know what to do in life, and indulging in the worldly things. Therefore, he says, reflect over and over again. Then you understand that these are modifications of flesh and bone. This body which looks so beautiful and smooth skin, the same skin is looked through a microscope. It will have a lot of germs in it even if it is cleaned 25 times. So the way you look at that body will be completely different then once you see it through the microscope. So the problem is we at the level of senses see it and we get deluded by it. So he says you just step backwards a little bit and start seeing it intellectually, analyze it, then you understand because you start seeing it in the right perspective. This is verse number 3. Then verse number 4 that we saw, it talks about life. It says this life is so uncertain, and he compares it with water on a lotus leaf. Lotus is born in water, lives in water, dies in water. And the little portion of water from the pond comes on the surface of the lotus leaf. The lotus leaf has a greasy surface. And the water on the lotus leaf is like mercury on paper. It's not steady. Any minute it will fall back into the total pond water. Similarly, this life, which is a small separation from the total, which can fall back into the total any minute, any second. So he says, water on a lotus leaf is extremely unsteady, so also is life very unstable. Understand that the entire world, consumed by disease and conceit, is smitten with sorrow. So if you are attached to this life, he is trying to tell us that life goes through these metamorphic changes called birth, growth, disease, decay and death. Everybody's body will go through birth, growth, disease, decay and death. And if you are attached to it, then it will only give you sorrow. Smitten with sorrow. So you can do how much ever you want. Try your best to retain your life. It is not possible. Therefore he says your attachment to it only gives you sorrow. So what then you have to do? While living in the body, use this wonderful equipment called the human body equipment to develop that detachment and start understanding what is the real purpose of life. All these first three purposes of life is a temporary purpose. Why you want the wealth? Why you want the pleasure? For your sake. When you are not there, what is the use of wealth and pleasure? So for your sake, the wealth and pleasure is important. Then it becomes extremely important to find out who are you? What is your real self? Therefore, he says, do not waste your life in all these frivolous aspects of life. Understand that the entire world consumed by disease, decay, it's full of conceit, is smitten with sorrow. So the whole thing is extremely unpredictable. How long? You know, everybody is so fond of astrology, so fond of the stones and all that, hoping that their life will be extended. But then he says it is extremely unsteady, so you rather invest in the right direction for attaining moksha. That's the whole idea. So he continues again in the next verse. Let us chant verse number 5. Yavat vitto pajana saktah tavanni japarivaro rattah. Yavat vitto pajana saktah tavanni japarivaro rattah. Pascha jivati jarjara dehe vartam kopina pricchati gehe. Pascha jivati jarjara dehe vartam kopina pricchati gehe. Yavat vitto pajana saktah tavan ద్విజ పరివారో రక్త పశ్చాజీవతి జర్జర దేహి వార్తాం కోపి న పృచ్ఛతి దేహి. Here he is talking with reference to wealth and the capacity to earn wealth. He says, Yavat and Pavat, the cause and effect he is talking about, the idiomatic construction. He says, as long as there is capacity to earn wealth, as long as there is capacity to earn wealth, so long would there be retinue. The following. Later, when he lives with infirm body, none would heed him at home. So what he is trying to say here is, he is doing Pratipaksha Bhavana with reference to wealth here. In verse number 3, he did Pratipaksha Bhavana with reference to enjoyment. Now here he is doing Pratipaksha Bhavana with reference to acquisition. Acquisition, enjoyment. See, mind doesn't stay in one place. It goes to past and future. And our past experiences tell us that all these things that we have acquired is temporary and taken away. So the mind in the present is struggling to see if in some way or the other we can secure our future also. And therefore, we somehow believe that the more I acquire, the more my future will be secure. So he says, as long as there is capability, capacity to earn wealth, so long would there be retinue. There's a very interesting poem. It says, laugh and the world will laugh with you. Weep, you weep alone. So that's what he's saying in a different way. So he is tying it up to capability to earn wealth. So in other words, the capability to earn wealth deteriorates as you age. Especially if you are indisciplined, even more. If you are disciplined, it will probably continue for a while. If you are indisciplined, sooner you will lose it. And the day you lose the capability to earn wealth, you will instantly see all those people who are behind you saying good morning, good evening, suddenly not there. You can see this, you know, in fact, without naming the name of that officer in government who's retired now. He was holding a very, very high position in government of India. And I knew him personally, so met him just a few days before he retired. And he is a Vedanta student. So he told me, the day I retire from here, next day, if I call this office, he was the boss, number one in that department. Above him is only minister. He says, the next day, if I call this office, even the peon won't answer my call. So the respect is only for the chair. You know. So the day before, when you go for a walk in the morning, there are so many people coming behind you saying good morning, good evening, because of the position. And the moment you retire, the next day there is nobody when you are going for a walk. These are the truths of life. So therefore, all he's trying to say is, you've got to find out what is essential, permanent, and then invest your time, effort, thoughts in them, not on the unnecessary, passing, fleeting things. And this you can especially notice it with reference to these people who are in power position, cricketers, you know, sportsmen, movie actors, all these people, There is a tremendous craze. What kind of a craze was there when Kapil Dev was playing? Now nobody really cares about it. I think I mentioned in one of the classes here also. The airport when I came out, just behind me Kapil Dev also came out. Delhi Airport. Then when I was waiting for my car to come, he also came same place to wait for his car. Nobody really bothered. But once in my flight to Chennai, Dhoni was traveling. You must have seen the bus there. Everybody running around, take his autograph, photo with him, etc., etc. That's what he's saying. While you are having it, you should have the right value. See, the problem is, many of us, when we have lost the capability and nobody is following, then we will say what is there in this, what is there in that. That is not being philosophical. That is stupidity. When I really don't have money, then I am saying what is there in money. No. When I have money, do I have the right value for it? When I have the capability and people are following me, I should understand it is because of my capability, which is a passing, fleeting phenomenon. Dhoni was a disciplined person and he was an extremely fit person. So he could extend his career up to his age of 38, 39. And he's still having a career in IPL. But many people who did not follow discipline, etc., their capabilities finished much faster. But even if they are extremely disciplined, there's only a certain time. So that's what he's saying. As long as there is capability to earn wealth, see, wealth means it's not just money. Anything that you can exchange for something in the world, so long as would there be a retinue following. So therefore, what he's trying to say here is, do not fall a prey to this following. Later on, this verse is also coming. Directly you tell that. So later when he lives with infirm body, later when the same person lives with infirm body, none would heed him. Forget about roads, outside, at home also. At home also, the value is gone. So this is unfortunate. So in other words, you got to really ask this question, what is worthy of my time, effort and thoughts? What is worthy of my time, efforts and thoughts? That's what he's saying. So if you do this Pratipaksha Bhavana technique with reference to wealth, then you will understand that these are passing and fleeting. You will just understand that it is for transactional purpose, like Swami Ramtita says, iron and gold is good for buying iron and gold. So you will not have disrespect for it. But there is no exaggerated value for it. So then you will be ready for the fall. Otherwise, you would fall with it when it is taken away from you. And 99.99% of people, they fall with it when they fall. They can't take it. You know, Clinton, when he was president of America, apparently the second term, last 6 months, somebody asked him, what do you dread the most? He said, the thought of being the ex-president of America. He still has 6 months time, but the thought of being ex-president of America, that is what he's talking about. So everything is in a constant phase of movement, including wealth. Wealth doesn't stay with one person. It keeps moving from one person to another. In fact, they say wealth maximum stays for 7 generations. After that, it goes away. Nowadays, you find it even in the 3rd generation or 4th generation, it goes away. It doesn't stay more than that. So do not get attached to it. Have the right value. Prepare yourself before the fall comes. That's the message here. This is with reference to wealth. Let's go to the next verse. Yavat pavano nivasati dehe tavat prichati kushalam gehe Yavat pavano nivasati dehe, tavat prichati kushalam dehe. Gatavati vayo dehra paye, bharya vidyati tasmin paye. Gatavati vayo dehra paye, bharya vidyati tasmin paye. Yavat pavano nivasati dehe, tavat prichati kushalam gehe. Gatavati vayo deha paye, bharya vidyati tasmin kaye. This yavat pavano nivasati dehe, tavat prichati kushalam gehe. He says, as long as breath lasts in the body, so long as would there be inquiry of welfare at home. Once the breath leaves the body and the body decays, even the wife fears the same body. Here he is talking about the relative futility of the body. All he wants to say is, the breath is what is keeping you alive. And you take it for granted. So he says, as long as breath lasts in the body. The breath leaves, life is gone. And it's very, very interesting that he talks about breath. The breath and mind are interconnected. When our mind runs towards the world helter-skelter, our breathing is also moving outward vigorously. And this drains our energy sooner, faster. Anybody who indulges the indulgent style of life, they deteriorate their life very fast. Their life deteriorates very fast. Only a person who is able to bring about certain control with reference to the senses and the mind, which in turn brings about control over the breath, is able to make sure the body is not deteriorating faster. Life is not deteriorating faster. So he says, majority of us are draining our breath in the search of material wealth and enjoyment. So, as long as breath loss in this body, so long would there be inquiry of welfare at home. And once the breath leaves, body decays, the wife fears the same body. So what he wants to say is, what is lending value to this body is the breath. So therefore, you've got to question what is giving you this sentientship. So body per se is insentient. Body per se is insentient. Matter per se is insentient. What enables the body to become sentient? Anybody? What enables the body to be sentient? What happens at the time of death? We have studied this in Bhagavad Gita, that's why I'm asking this question. What happens at the time of death according to Vedanta?
At the time of death, the breath leaves the body, the prana leaves the body.
How do you define death in Vedanta?
changing clothes, changing one body to the other?
Yeah, so explain that fully.
It's like, sorry?
I said what Avantika said is correct, but explain that fully.
Oh, the way you change clothes, the Atma changes bodies. So once it's done with use of one body, it moves on to the another.
So you have to stand up on the bench now. There is no Atma changing body.
Sorry?
Atma doesn't change body. You got to rephrase it.
The soul looks for another body to go to.
Okay. When we study second chapter, where he talks about this, Vasamsi Jirnani Yata Vihaya Navani Grinnati Naroparani, that particular verse, we discussed this. I think it's verse number 22, chapter 2 of the Bhagavad Gita, where he gives this comparison of the body to the vesture, which Avantika referred to. So now, there I talked about this concept of death, which is, with an example, that sunlight is all pervading. Sunlight falls everywhere. It's all pervading. And if there are two frames, frame A and frame B, and in frame A, if a mirror is fixed, and in frame B, there is no mirror fixed. Though the sunlight falls on frame A and frame B, the sunlight reflects only in the mirror in frame A, and since there is no mirror in frame B, there is no reflection there. Then when I unscrew the mirror from frame A and screw it back into frame B, then what do I say? The reflected sun has moved from frame A to frame B in the medium of sunlight. Correct? In the medium of sunlight, the reflected sun has moved from frame A to frame B. So in this example, physical bodies compared to the frame, the subtle body, the mind and intellect, is compared to the mirror. Atma is compared to the sunlight. Atma, the sunlight has not moved from one frame to another. What has moved? The reflected sun, the reflected Atma, the Jivatma has moved. Why? Because the subtle body, the mirror has moved. So therefore, what is death? The phenomenon of death we discussed and said that when the subtle body along with the causal body, subtle body means mind and intellect, causal body means vasanas. So when the subtle body along with the causal body moves from one gross body to another gross body in the medium of pure consciousness, that's called death. Right? When the subtle body along with the causal body moves from one gross body to another gross body in the medium of pure consciousness, that's called death. And the new physical body that it will take up will depend upon the desires in the subtle body. Okay? So this we discussed. So here, when he says, as long as life is there, even your wife will inquire about the welfare of this body. But once it's gone, no more value for this body. One American, professor, I don't know what calculation he did. He did some calculation and he says the body is only worth some 98 cents. Not more than that once it is dead. If an elephant body, when it dies, there is tremendous value maybe. But human body, nobody wants. You understand? So, I don't know what when did he do this calculation, 98 cents with inflation, now it may be 900 rupees, that's all. Not more than that. So not even 1,000 rupees if you calculate the inflation and all that. So the whole thing is, he's just trying to tell us that what is giving value to this. So if you take that example, what is giving value? The sunlight. if because of the sunlight there is reflected sun which is moving. So if similarly the sunlight is falling on the mirror and the reflected sun comes. Similarly, the body is attached to the mind and the Atma reflected through the mind enlivens the body. So when he says breath, he actually to trace backwards and go, it is the Atma. But we don't have any value for the Atma while living. We get attached to this reflected sun, the reflected personality, the reflected self. And that is something that will constantly keep shifting from one body to another. So he says, this has no value whatsoever. So while, see, it's like this demonetization, you know, the government has valued and said this has this value. If you give this, it is equivalent to this much. Like they give you a share certificate. There is a value that is given by the authority. They say it is worth 500 rupees, 1000 rupees. Then they said now we are devaluing it. Now these are all just a mere paper, that's all. Now the new things, 2000, etc. So similarly, what is lending value to this body? It's the Atma. And because the Atma is reflected in this body, all your relationships, everything is there. But now what happens is, you get lost in all those relationships, you forget about Atma. That's what he's saying. The very reason for your relations to cling around you is that Atma. But that Atma itself is forgotten. Then he questions that. So he says, as long as there is breath in the body, so long would there be inquiry of welfare at home. Obviously, nobody goes and inquires the welfare once the person dies. And not only that, there are people who are scared to sleep in the very same room after the person has died for a few days. So therefore, once the breath leaves and body decays, it is something that will, you know, decay. When a person dies, the breath goes, the water goes, the heat goes, then the body becomes powder. Slowly, slowly. And it will go back to the five elements. The five elements with which this body is made, it will go back to those five elements. And per se, they are insentient. So therefore, he says, instead of seeking the Supreme Self, we are living an extroverted life. If you really do this analysis and understand what is giving me this value, that I must retain and I must value that which giving value to me. But the fact that my mind is running towards the world, I start giving value to those things. Then at the fat end of my life, suddenly I say, I hope I should have done something better. Is there any possibility of me somehow coming out so that I can do something with the reference to my life? So this is what he said. There is so much focus we give to the body, but the body is something that will decay and die. So while you need to take care of your body, do not tamper it. It's not worth it. So you need to therefore understand that these are passing and fleeting. Retain a certain amount of detachment with reference to the body. And this body, when he talks about, all our attachments are with reference to the body. My brothers and sisters who came from the same body from which I came, and their children, and my children, and their children, all are connected with this body. Beyond this, we don't see. We are very happy saving the shadow while losing the reality. That's the delusion. we don't really worry that we have lost the self. We are happy. But if a pencil is lost, we will become worried. The self, which is the most valuable thing, which is lending sentience to us, we don't care. We are not even aware that we have lost it. But a pencil or a pen or a watch or something like this, something material, is so much bothering us. That's what he says. So, your friends, your relatives, everyone is flocking around you because there is life in this body. So therefore, go to the source. While you are living in this body, value the source. We don't value the source. We value all this paraphernalia. Hence he says, you should start questioning this. Then you will have a right value. So it doesn't mean when somebody comes into your house, you say you are only valuing me as long as this life is there, once I die, what will happen? You know, you don't talk those kind of things to them. But within you, you understand. So as a result, what happens is, before the world rejects you, you have rejected it mentally. That mental rejection, today why you are not able to reject? Because you have mental infatuation. So to move from that mental infatuation to the state of mental rejection, Pajagovindam helps. Once you have mentally rejected it, then there is no loss for you. See, when you have mentally rejected profit and loss, how can profit and loss affect you? When you have value for it, then it affects you. Isn't it? But when you have mentally rejected it, how can profit and loss affect you? So this is what he is trying to say. By clear analysis, you will be able to become detached. Moha Mudgara. You will uplift the moha. So therefore, once you give value to the source, then what you do? You will trace the breath, go backwards, and backwards, and backwards, and reach the self. See, today the moha makes us run forward. Once you overcome the moha, then you go backwards towards the source of the self. In fact, when we start moving backwards towards the self, our life becomes more, what do you call, meaningful, enjoyable, and also long-lasting, you can say. Because there will be less of indulgences. There will be less of drain. Dissipation of energy will be less. As a result, you begin to live your life. So he's asking us to trace the source. You should be bothered about the roots and not about the fruits. The mind tends to run after the fruits. Therefore, these verses are very, very practical verses. They're asking us to think. Next day morning, if this breath, which is temporarily residing in the body, leaves us, everything is gone. Everything is gone. Nothing is meaningful thereafter. No reason the whole thing seems to be valuable because there is breath in this body. And the previous verse already said that can go any minute. Any minute. So therefore, while you are there, understand this. But the problem is the power of Maya is such that in spite of reading all this, we will still be stuck. So how our mind is infatuated and preoccupied at different stages with the different toys, that beautifully he talks in the next verse. Next verse is a very off-quoted verse. very famous and oft-quoted verse. Balastavat krida saktah tarunastavat taruni saktah. Balastavat krida saktah tarunastavat taruni saktah. Vriddhastavat chinta saktah parame brahmani kopina saktah. Vriddhastavat chinta saktah parame brahmani kopina saktah. Balastavat krida saktah tarunastavat taruni saktah. Vriddhastavat chinta saktah parame brahmani kopina saktah. Balastavat krida saktah. So when you were a child, you played with toys. So long as childhood lasts, one is attached to the playthings. Krida. Balastavat krida saktah. Tarunastavat taruni saktah. So long as youth lasts, one is attached to the opposite sex. Damsel is this, the opposite sex. And then, is there so long as one is stuck to the age, old age, one is attached to worry. Vriddhastavat chinta saktah. Then he asks the question, parame brahmani kopina saktah. Kaha api, kopi means kaha api. When do you even have time to think of Brahma? Who is ever attached to the Supreme Reality? He says, no, he's only a small child and he'll start all these things once he becomes young. And once he's young, he's stuck with this. Then he says, he's only young, once he sets a career, once everything sets down, then he'll come. Then you become old age, then you become a lot more worries and anxieties. If you are traveling with an old person sitting in your car next to you, he will caution you about the lamppost which is 500 meters away. Be careful, there is a lamppost. There is a constant worry. Preoccupation. All he is talking about is, our mind is all the time preoccupied. It is never available for reflection. That's all he is saying. In this verse, this is what he is saying. When you are a small child, you are preoccupied with thoughts. When you become young, you are preoccupied with the opposite sex, career, etc. Once you come to old age, worries and anxieties. Throughout your life, there is too much preoccupation. All that time preoccupation. Seldom your mind is free. So what is this technique of living? The technique of living is not talking about running away from occupations. The technique of living is only emphasizing to become free from the preoccupations. While one needs to be occupied in the world, one needs to become free from the preoccupations of the world. The mind is preoccupied. Child's mind is preoccupied with toy world. Young person's mind is preoccupied with career, opposite sex, etc. And the old age, the mind is preoccupied with all this worries, anxieties, can't sleep, disturbance. One by one, you see your friends losing their life and it takes you to a lot of worries. How your children are going to survive in this devastating world. It's a very cunning world, sir. How my children will survive? I don't know. You know, you tend to become a little bit pessimistic if you haven't got this knowledge. Swami Vivekananda says, everybody is an optimist when he's young. But when he turns old, he becomes pessimist. So in that sense, so it's a very, very interesting verse. It's saying about our preoccupation. So, these preoccupations bind us. That is samsara. Preoccupation is samsara. See, a lot of us, we think when Vedanta says, drop your samsara, we think we have to drop the occupation. No. You've got to carefully analyze here. People say, work is giving me stress. I have too much to do, sir. Too much to do. So it's giving me a lot of stress, a lot of stress. So what do? Once in a while they take off from work and they go to some other place to relax for a few days. And those few days, they're not thinking about work. They are not occupied with work. They become really, really relaxed. But when they come back to work, again the stress starts. So this makes them say that work is giving them stress. But if you actually analyze, when I came to work, I'm finding stress. When I moved away from work, I was finding myself relaxed. So does it mean that the work is giving stress? Could that only be that reason, or could there be another reason? Vedanta says, the other thing is, when you come to work, what is happening? You are also bringing your attachment to work. You are bringing the I to work. I am doing this. You are bringing lust to work. Through the work, you want to achieve something. You are not bringing love to work, you are bringing lust to work. When you bring love to work, through work you want to give something. When you are bringing lust to work, you are wanting to take something from work. So therefore what Vedanta says is, it's not the quantum of work that is giving you stress. If it is the quantum of work, then you just need a little bit of time management, then you will be coming out of stress. But in spite of all the time management and everything, if you're still going through stress, what it means is, it's your lust to work. It's your I that comes in the way. That is only giving you stress. It's your attachment that is giving you stress, not the work. So therefore, you have to become free from the preoccupations, not from the occupation. The whole life we are therefore thinking. So in other words, everybody is working for what? To retire and enjoy. And then you keep on blaming the politicians across the world for the cause of inflation. So how much ever I earn, I don't think so it's enough. Because now I'm thinking this much is enough, but once I reach there, then inflation has gone up. So how much ever I get, it's not enough. So where is the fault lying? The fault lying not in your head. You are thinking it's the occupation. No, it's not the occupation. It's the preoccupation. You are preoccupied with acquisition and enjoyment. So we want to get rid of the acquisition to enjoy, but we'll never be able to. Today, majority of the people, they have their goal is what? I want to retire at the age of 40. With so and so money, this, that, everything, I want to retire. So that I can enjoy. Because they think occupation is a hazard in their enjoyment. It's a wrong thinking. In the Bhagavad Gita, when he talks about a perfect human being, he says, yas sarvatra anabhisneha. One who is everywhere without attachment. One who is dynamically functioning in the world without attachment. Yaha sarvatra anabhisneha. Without attachment. Tattat prapya subha subha. Na abhinandati nadveshti tasya prajna pratishtita. You are said to be a perfect person when you dynamically act in this world without attachment. And whatever you meet in life, the good and bad, you treat them equally. Not getting excited with the good, not getting dejected with bad. tattat prapya shubha ashubha na abhinandati natveshti tasya prajna prishti. So Vedanta is clearly asking us to analyze, distinguish between occupation and preoccupation. At every point in time of our life, there is something or the other I am preoccupied. My mind is never free. So the technique of living is, while my body is engaged in action, my mind should be at rest. Our case is ulta. Body is at rest, mind is preoccupied. The life of a wise person, life of an unwise person is completely ulta. Our life is, body is at rest, mind is fully preoccupied. Their life is, body is working, mind is restless. That's the whole thing. So, he says, when a person is lived this way and becomes old, the fact that he has been spending his life fully in acquisition and enjoyment, the energy is drained and the body becomes incapable of functioning and the attachment is there at the mind level, which brings in tremendous worries and anxieties. I'm constantly under tension. It doesn't enjoy. It doesn't allow others to enjoy us. This is the problem. We are not growing. We are swelling. This is the difference. We are not growing, but we are swelling. So, balaha. Then philosophically, the masters call us balaha. Even Bhajagovindam calls us balaha. Children. Balaha, children, because we are really not grown. What we have done? We used to play with monopoly money. Now we are playing with the money validated by the government. That's all. We have not become playful. See, when you drop the preoccupations, life becomes leela. It's a Krishna leela. Krishna is sporting. Life should become a sport. But how will it be a sport when you are preoccupied? It will not be. You know, when there was this match between India and Pakistan in the World Cup 1996 semi-finals, we played in Bangalore cricket. They called it a war. They killed a jungle. Here in Bhagavad Gita, the background is jungle. But Sri Krishna is killing a kale. Kshetra, Kshetrajna, Vibhaga, Yoga. He says, you know, everything is Kshetra. I am the Kshetrajna. Kshetrajnam Chapimam Vitti Sarva Kshetreshu Bharata. I am Kshetrajna in all these Kshetras. Just enter and play. But no. I am preoccupied. Kya hoga? You take the marble away from the child and give the shareholding, maximum shareholding in a marble manufacturing company, the child will still be agitated. Because child doesn't understand. You took away five marbles with which it was playing and you gave the child 51% share of a marble, the same marble manufacturing company. Child will still cry. Why? Because child doesn't know the higher values of life. It is preoccupied with the lower values. This is our condition. At different stages of life, we only change the object of our preoccupation, but we never lose the habit of preoccupation. We are habituated. Something or other should be there. You have a withdrawal symptom, like, you know, your hand starts shaking if mobile is not there in your hand. Like an alcoholic. If he's not given a glass of alcohol, his hand starts shaking. So like that, our mobile is not there, hand starts shaking. Something has to be there. Otherwise you feel like you're useless. This only shows that the inner strength is not there. So he's only trying to say, while you live in this body, develop the inner strength and reduce the dependence. See there, how do you know if you are really living or not? The person who is living the life truly will reduce all the dependence. But if we keep on increasing the dependency, then we do not know how to live. So that's why he says, Balastavat Krida Saktaha, Tarunastavat Taruni Saktaha, Vrittastavat Chinta Saktaha, Parame Brahmani Kopina Saktaha. Who is even thinking of Brahman? If we are going to God and complaining, oh God, you please think about me, think about us, please take care of me, you should think about me. Now God is sitting and crying as it were, nobody is thinking about me. Parame Brahmani Kopina Saktaha. When are you going to think of Brahman? And if you think of Brahman now and you identify with Brahman, none of this can affect you. But without the thought of Brahman, if you are only thinking about the world, you will certainly go through all these things. So therefore he is asking, when will you really start be concerned about pursuing the real aspects of life? How long are you going to spend in this toys and waste your life? That's the question. So let us conclude the class for today. We'll meet next week. Let us chant the prayers. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnam Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadhaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Om Kayena Vacha Manasendriyaiva Buddhyatmana Va Prakrute Svabhava Karomi Adhyat Sakalam Parasmai Narayana Eti Samarpayami. Hariyom.